Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gramling. I'll be introducing a very special guest in just a moment here, but I'll get right to it. This is part two of the mock draft show. I want to run through the first eight picks in case you missed the first one. I mean, there's no real reason to not have listened to the first one. You can go back in your feed and listen to that and then sort of live your life properly. But let me give the first eight picks real quick. We're doing eight teams per show. We had eight different teams pick in the first part of the series. We'll have eight different teams picking today, and then we'll have some duplicates coming up, so we'll go a little bit deeper into the first round. But that's just logistical stuff. You don't really care about that. It was Andy Benoit joining me last week, running through the team needs, and I assigned some picks. We ended up with Cincinnati takes Joe Burrow, Washington takes Chase Young, Detroit takes Okuda, Giants take Jedrick Willis, Miami takes Becton, Chargers take Isaiah Simmons, Carolina takes Tristan Wirfs, and Arizona takes Chaseon, the edge rusher from LSU. So we still have all the quarterbacks except for Burrow on the board as we go to the second part, and now I bring in our very special guest. It is Andy Benoit. Andy, how are you?
Hey, Gary. I'm doing well. And I guess this is probably the part where we need to give the caveat that we're not necessarily doing a mock draft here. We're just going through team needs, and then you're filling in a guy.
It's a mock draft exercise. How about
well,
that?
Well, I can't imagine that there will be this many quarterbacks left on the board in the actual draft in a few weeks at this point.
Did you see friend of the show Greg Cassell and his thoughts on Tua?
I'm familiar with what Greg, I've talked to Greg about Tua, so yeah. I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. I thought I was relatively down on Tua. I'm not saying he's down on Tua, but I think there's a better chance than most people do that Tua sort of slips out of the top five. And frankly, months ago when I first discussed this with Kaylin Kaler and she shared some of her reporting that she's gotten around the league, I kind of thought it would be Herbert. Maybe going five and then Tua going six if it played out like the draft order does right now with no one trading up. But people told me I was crazy at the time, and who's crazy now? Possibly me, because the draft still hasn't happened and we don't really know the answers to these questions. But I think it's within the realm of possibility that Tua does not go with that second or third pick. And I don't know if Miami loves him. I don't know if he's a Miami type of guy, which we discussed a little bit on the first part of the show. But we'll call it a mock draft because that's kind of what we're doing. It's an exercise. We're not sharing reported interest in we heard this team thinks this guy is going there, and no one gets terribly reliable information on that stuff anyway. But
no,
we are here at nine, and that puts the Jacksonville Jaguars on the clock. And I guess before you talk Jaguars team needs at all, you have to assess how long is this coaching staff going to last? I mean, I thought they were done after the 2018 season, and I was sure they were done after the 2019 season, but Doug Marrone still hanging in.
Yeah, Doug Marrone is still hanging in there, and I think when you asked about the coaching staff and how long they last, that's an important question in this draft because of the scheme fit factor when you're looking at talent and guys. And scheme fit is a critical trait. Everybody says they don't, you know, we're going to take the best available. We'll work our scheme around them. Nobody in the NFL does that. Teams have their schemes. Coaches coach what they know best, and you find players that fit the scheme. That's what the best teams do. So the best schemes are adaptable, but it's not, nobody just gets their roster and says, all right, what's the scheme this year for these guys, or what do we do? You still have to have a foundation. And if you don't know who the coach will be next year, and Gary, there's probably a part of Jacksonville that doesn't, because it's public knowledge that Marrone was almost fired. I mean, he didn't know if he was going to have a job or not, and he's kind of shared that for a while. So if they go 6-10 this year, which is what they went last year, Marrone's almost certainly going to be out. So if you're the GM of the Jaguars, Dave Caldwell, for one, you're probably worried about your job if you go 6-10. But do you draft for right now and what you have with Marrone, or do you do what you've been doing this offseason, which is building for the future? Because they've done wholesale changes there in Jacksonville this year, which leads me to believe they're looking longer down the road, but that's unusual to see that with a coach on the hot seat. You don't usually see long-term building with a coach coming back like this.
Yeah, I mean, look, you look at what the AFC South is right now, and we saw what the Titans did last January. I think the Colts are in for a monster bounce back this year. I would, if I was handicapping this division, I would probably go, I might go Indianapolis, then Tennessee, then Houston. Really, though, any of those three teams, I think you'd put on the best of the non-Kansas City teams, the AFC list, and I don't think you would consider putting the Jaguars in there. So it's tough to see how they avoid another losing season.
So let's assume that they're going to play for right now, or they're going to draft guys for right now, because one saving grace is that their schemes are pretty classic on both sides of the ball. It's not a highly unusual system. On offense, it's pretty well schemed with a play action outside zone foundation under Jay Gruden. I'm assuming that's what it'll be, because that's what Gruden has always coached. And then defensively, it's that old Seahawks style scheme. Matchup zone coverage, mostly zone coverage. You have matchup corners, everybody else plays zone, and you want fast guys who can rally to the ball because they tend to play a little deeper in that zone coverage. So that's the kind of player these teams are looking for, and it probably be with all the needs they have, Gary, it becomes a function of who's on the board. Maybe they can take best on the board because they have so many needs, but precise route runners on offense, fast guys on defense at the 30,000 foot level.
All right, so you look at the offensive weapons here. Obviously, you know, Leonard Fournette is back as sort of the bell cow back there. At tight end, Josh Oliver, to me, is a really interesting prospect. He was injured last year, really never got it going because he was just working behind. And on top of that, they signed Tyler Eifert. So you figure they're okay at tight end. You look at the receiver depth chart. DJ Chark obviously emerged as a true number one. Do you want to compliment him?
I think he's still got some. Okay. I think he's a work in progress, but he's going in a great direction.
Fair. Do you look at the rest of that depth chart and say we need a second guy to compliment him, or are you more worried about the defensive backfield at this point?
Well, it's hard to play in the NFL if you have to hide your corners. You can't hide your corners every snap. Mm-hmm. And they don't have a lot of depth at cornerback. Rashawn Melvin and DJ Hayden are projected as the starters. They've always been fringe kind of starters throughout their career. I think Melvin does fit the scheme. Hayden's going to play the slot, though, in nickel, so you still need an outside guy. And maybe they like Trey Herndon. I thought he was pretty solid last year. In my mind's eye, I'd have to go back and look at my notes exactly on him, but there were positives with Herndon last season for being an undrafted guy now entering his third year. So there's a chance they feel a little better about their cornerbacks, and maybe we'd guess. It's probably not enough to make them pass on one that they'd like early in the draft still. My concern with their wide receivers has always been that a lot of these guys are the same body type and style. Keelan Cole, DeeDee Westbrook, Marquise Lee. I don't think there's a lot of difference from one to the next, and I don't know if any of them are true high-level starters. Westbrook's been very productive at times, and Cole has too, but they're going to be a function of the scheme to some degree, a large degree. So then the conversation becomes, are we comfortable with that? Do we believe in our scheme that much? And the people making that decision, you know, I believe in Jay Gruden's scheme that much. The people deciding that, though, in Jacksonville, they're brand new with Gruden. He just got here a few months ago. So I don't know how they're going to. Obviously, they have some confidence in him because they wouldn't have hired him otherwise. But it's not like that the scheme's been in place for 5 or 6 years like the defensive scheme has. So that becomes to each his own right there. And that's why it's hard to project exactly what Jacksonville will do.
All right. So if we're looking at probably best player on the board right now is Derrick Brown, the defensive tackle. If we're talking about need, as we are a lot, and relative need here, you'd probably have C.J. Henderson of Florida, who I think he's more of a pure man guy. He's an inconsistent tackler, let's call it. I don't think he's necessarily unwilling. He just gets a little bit sloppy in that part of his game. And then you got the two receivers, Jerry Jeudy, who body type wise, I mean, he's a lot more similar to like a Marquise Lee or a DeeDee Westbrook or those guys. However, I think he is a cut above those guys as far as gaining separation and making plays. And then CeeDee Lamb, who for the purpose of shorthand in this, you know, basically a bigger receiver skill set.
And so, and I love that you're, I'm starting to look into these guys, by the way. So whenever you can mention their position and name in school, I'll love you for that, because they're starting to register with me. I'm starting to study the draft guys. And from what I've learned about Judy at Alabama, and this is me hearing, this is not my analysis, because I'm not watching film on these guys the way I do the pros, but I can't imagine a team in Jacksonville's position passing on Judy if he happens to somehow still be on the board at this kind of this late in the draft.
All right, sounds like the coach is demanding Jerry Jeudy then.
Yeah, let's give, Gruden shows up and pounds the tables.
Let's give.
Well,
the
he can't pound the tables, can he? Because they're all going to be at their own house.
He can pound a table at his house.
Yeah, it's not going to have the same effect.
While carefully social distancing, he can set up a second mic like on his kitchen table so that it gets the effect.
Yeah.
He's got to get a sound engineer in there, or he'll, well, not in there, but he'll have to take a class online or something like that, a tutorial. I'm sure someone on YouTube can show him how to do it. But Jerry Jeudy, the Alabama receiver, goes to Jacksonville, first receiver off the board here in the historically great receiver class that we're learning all about here. That brings us to the Cleveland Browns at 10. What are the Browns looking for?
Well, remember last year, our big concern at this time of year was left tackle. And can Greg Robinson hold up? And we said, how terrible would it be if you go into the season with all these weapons, Baker Mayfield coming off a great rookie year, mostly great, and it all gets short-circuited because you have a glaring weakness up front, particularly on the edge. And that's kind of what happened. Mayfield was responsible for a lot of what went wrong offensively as well. Everybody was. It wasn't a great setup and situation for Cleveland across the board last year. But no doubt at all that porous left tackle play, porous right tackle play at times, that was a major issue for the Browns. So they signed Jack Conklin, a free agency Tennessee Titans right tackle. It would be a mistake to move him to the left side because he really has not gotten comfortable with his mechanics until this past year. And mechanics are so different from one side to the other. I would not mess with Conklin. If you're paying him all the money to be a right tackle, leave him at right tackle. So that means you need a left tackle. And there's a lot of really good ones in this draft that I'm sure Cleveland would tap into. I can't imagine they would not go at this position at this pick, Gary.
Yeah, and in our exercise here, the one of the four that are sort of considered the first tier at offensive line, still on the board, that's Georgia's Andrew Thomas, and he certainly, he was a left tackle at Georgia, and he certainly fits the bill as far as the classic left tackle type, and since he has experience there, makes a lot of sense to slot him in here.
The one thing you wonder a little bit about, Chris Hubbard, their right tackle, who's now, I don't know if they'll move him to left or what they'll do. You know, he signed a deal a few years ago, so I'm looking at his contract now to see, because some guys, it's probably not going to work this way in Cleveland because it's a new regime, but it's hard to bench guys that are getting paid a lot of money sometimes. Mm. It's just a mental block that teams have with it. So it looks like they could have gotten rid of Hubbard this year with relative little damage, and they can next year as well. So his contract's probably not prohibitive. In fact, they had an opt-out in 2020. So they'd have to figure out what to do with Chris Hubbard, but I could see him moving to guard. He's the smallest tackle in the NFL anyway, size-wise, truly is. Defensively, Gary, it's interesting what they've done on this side of the ball. They need a linebacker. And they might like Sione Talkie-Talkie, last year's third-round pick, and Mac Wilson played better than expected. I still think they could use a linebacker, and they probably need some depth at safety, but they've signed some guys on defense that can really run the scheme right away, and there's a certain comfort with that. A coaching staff, when they're brand new, they have to find a fine line and strike that balance between developing the roster, but also plugging some guys in there that allows a team to compete right now. You need guys that know the system so they can teach it to other guys and display how to do it correctly. So Andrew Sandejo from Minnesota's there now at safety. He's not your long-term answer, but he played for their passing game coordinator, Jeff Howard, in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. He's been with Joe Woods, Kevin Stefanski. He's a Viking guy. They know what they're getting with Sandejo. They've done that quite a bit on defense and some other spots. It's really just across the board to some degree, which gives them some flexibility with how they're going to draft on that side of the ball.
Huh. I don't know.
I just said everything
and
nothing right there, didn't I?
Yeah.
So it's up to you now.
No, I mean, look, from a value standpoint, there is depth at a lot of these positions. And again, I think it's a really interesting offensive line class when you get to day two, but I think Thomas is the gap between Thomas and the day two tackles is going to be greater than the gap between, let's say, you know, some of these top safeties and the guy they, excuse me, guys they'd be selecting from on day two. So
sure.
I want to slot in Andrew Thomas here, which would take the fourth of the big four offensive linemen off the board as we arrive at the 11th pick, and that's New York Jets.
New York Jets have a lot of needs for a team that went 6-2 in the second half of last season. And as you pointed out, I think a couple shows ago, Gary, that quietly they were 7-6 when their quarterback was healthy this year. They were, if Sam Darnold had been there for those other three games and they had stayed on that kind of path, and remember they had a tough start schedule-wise early in the season, but the point is they would have been in playoff contention at some point late in the year if Darnold had been healthy. It would have been a conversation, and therefore the feeling around the Jets and Gase and this whole setup in New York would be very different than it is now. So that's where the Jets were a year ago. Now, I think they've taken a step back talent-wise. They've lost some guys in free agency. Robbie Anderson's a big loss. Breshad Perriman, they did sign. I think you need one more wide receiver if you're going to make that work. And then defensively, they are thin at cornerback. Greg Williams does two things. He blitzes a lot and he plays cover two. And those things don't really go hand in hand. But in New York, they do go hand in hand because Greg Williams, their D coordinator, he's one of the few that will blitz his corners out of cover two. So a versatile cornerback, a guy that has the physicality to jam receivers, because you have to do that if you're playing cover two or man-to-man. That's what they really need most of all, unless there's a good receiver, that a great receiver available to them here.
Yeah, you're C.D. Lamb of Oklahoma is still on the board here, and he's your top. I think you call him top all-around receiver left. Kind of interesting. Henry Ruggs, who's really more of a pure deep threat from Alabama, he's on the board. Obviously, they just lost Robbie Anderson as sort of a big play guy there. And then your top corner is C.J. Henderson. I think he can become that kind of guy. I mean, look, he's fast and he's long. Again, I don't think he's necessarily not physical, but you know, he's sort of inconsistent and a little bit sloppy. It stylistically, I guess, is not how he played, but I wouldn't say he would be unwilling to play that type of style. But I guess that's your question there. C.J. Henderson, the Florida corner, versus CeeDee Lamb, the Oklahoma receiver. I think on the overall board, Lamb will be higher, and then Ruggs is kind of the wild card as the you know, the big play deep threat, a guy who scored on 1/4 of his touches at Alabama, and as we will probably discuss at some point, you know, Tua not really a deep ball thrower, not really a great mm-hmm. you know, not a guy you're gonna have thrown downfield constantly.
So you kind of lean towards a wide receiver, it sounds like.
Leaning towards a wide receiver. I think Lamb, again, I think a lot of people would, regardless of team, you'd say Lamb instead of Ruggs. I wonder if Ruggs is an option here just because they lost that big play option when Robbie Anderson signed with the Panthers.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be. Keep in mind, Gase is going to feel like his scheme will get a lot of the job done. He's very confident in that. His scheme does need good wide receiver play and speed at wide receiver, especially when he can align that guy inside. A few years ago, it was Kenny Stills who did that for him. That can be a real valuable tool. So I would imagine that's what the coaching staff's going to want, at least offensively. Speed at wide receiver is a hard one to go wrong with.
Do you want to give him the speedy guy then?
Well, is the difference, I mean, Is it speed a one trick pony guy? Only speed?
It's mostly speed. Let's put it that way.
I would imagine they'll feel okay about that. You know, Sean Jefferson. Do you remember Sean Jefferson from the Patriots
Yep.
years ago in the '90s? He's their wide receivers coach. And he has a high-ranking title there. He has a big voice in the room. I'm sure they would feel confident that they can develop a wide receiver who comes in with, you know, needing some development if that guy's got a pair of wheels.
Okay. Let's get – I think it's a really interesting fit. Let's give him Henry Ruggs III, the Alabama receiver, second Alabama receiver off the board here. CeeDee Lamb is still available at this point in our mock draft exercise. And by the way, Sean Jefferson's son is in this draft, probably going to go day two, Van Jefferson out of Florida.
Well, then that's who the Jets would be taking.
I think they get him automatically. It's like in Little League. Like, I mean, you can't – you know, you can't take another coach's kid on your team. I think they automatically get him signed up with the Jets. That's how it should work, at least. That brings us to the 12th pick, and that is the Las Vegas Raiders.
Well, they had cornerback figured out until a couple days ago. Eli Apple, I guess that deal fell through. So defensively, they need a corner, and they've told you that because they went out and signed a notable one, and now they got to find another guy to replace that notable one that didn't ever land. Edge rusher is a major need for them still. They like Max Crosby a lot, as they should. He only comes off of one edge, though. And Cleland Farrell, their defensive tackle, that's what he is in nickel. He's a defensive tackle. He plays defensive end and base, but he'll move to tackle in pass rush situations. They need an edge rusher badly. And, you know, they also need a wide receiver pretty badly. I know you may have heard that the Antonio Brown thing didn't work out last year, Gary. So it's three, I would say, glaring needs on a roster that's otherwise pretty well set with the depth at wide receiver in this draft. I would imagine, and how hard it is to find edge rushing talent, I would imagine they'd want to go there. But maybe, you know, you said, I think last show, it's not a great draft after the first couple of edge rushers necessarily.
Yeah, and I think the thing with the edge rushers on the board here, the top guys left are all kind of, you know, like A.J. Epinesa from Iowa is probably a guy who you might even reduce inside, and if Cleland Farrell, their first-round pick last year, is going to be asked to do that, now you've just duplicated him. Yetur Gross-Matos from Penn State, I think he's a guy who is, you know, he's really good sort of looping inside. He's a good athlete, but he's not, you know, just a pure speed off the edge type of guy. And I wonder if you're just sort of duplicating the two guys that you brought in last year, the two rookies being Farrell and Max Crosby there. So obviously CeeDee Lamb still on the board on this one. As far as the corners go, I mean, C.J. Henderson is, again, he's the top guy on the board. He's got plenty of speed, good size, maybe a little bit unrefined, but, you know, both those guys are looking pretty good at the 12th spot here.
Well, and one thing that I think at some point will enter John Gruden's mind and GM Mike Mayock's mind is our defense and free agency signed Malik Collins from Dallas, and I thought that was a good bargain they got for him. Signed Nick Kwiatkowski from Chicago, mm-hmm. quality speed player. Corey Littleton from the Rams, another big-time quality cover linebacker. They're getting Trayvon Mullen now in a full year. He was their second-round pick at corner last year. He came on late in the season. They signed Demarius Randall, versatile safety for him. Jonathan Abrams coming back from injury as their first-round pick a year ago. Jeff Heath gives them some depth now, former Cowboy. It's a lot of new Carl Nassib, a defensive end who's very similar to Crosby, by the way. It's a lot of new players on defense. You have to believe that might suggest they do something early on offense. And at some point, John Gruden's going to throw up his hands and say, hey, quit giving Paul Gunther all the guys. You know, let me have some guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
John Gruden, by the way, gets to make the decision in the end. So I would think it's wide receiver here.
Yeah, let's give them CeeDee Lamb. They're another one that's interesting, just because I think Ruggs is a really nice complement to Tyrell Williams there. But CeeDee Lamb is certainly a really good all-around player who profiles as a potential number one receiver, and they will sort of figure out what to do after that, deeper on the depth chart as they go on.
And Derek Carr is... he's really, you know, last year Oakland, when they were Oakland, they're Vegas now, they threw the ball vertically about two-thirds as much as anybody else in the NFL. Mm-hmm. They did not stretch, and that's a low number. Everybody else had about 65 or 70 20-plus yard throws, and the Raiders had about 45 to 50. And some of that is just the nature of Derek Carr and his style of quarterbacking, too. So you said good all around receiver. That to me, if I'm building around Carr, and I am for this year, and you know, you're on the cusp of the playoffs last year, mm-hmm. so you ought to be thinking about building for now to some degree. I'm giving the best all-around receiver rather than trying to find a guy that stretches the field, because I don't know if we stretch the field anyway.
All right. We are on to San Francisco with the 13th pick, the pick that they got from Indianapolis in the DeForest Buckner trade. Just to recap really, really quick, I swear it'll be really quick. Burrow to Cincinnati, Chase Young to Washington, Okuda to Detroit, Wills to Giants, Becton to Miami, Simmons to the Chargers, Isaiah Simmons, that is, Wirfs to Carolina, Chasen to Arizona, Jerry Jeudy to Jacksonville, Andrew Thomas to Cleveland, Henry Ruggs to the Jets, and CeeDee Lamb to Las Vegas. That brings us to the 49ers.
49ers, their whole secondary is in the last year of its contract, pretty much. I think everybody except Jimmy Ward, who they recently re-signed, I think the rest of them are all in contract years. So Jaquaski Tart at that strong safety, and then all the other corners. And they probably felt they needed a corner anyway, because Richard Sherman, though he's still playing at a truly elite level, is on the wrong side of 30. And opposite him, Akella Witherspoon struggled after a great start to the season. He got hurt and wasn't the same guy when he came back. Maybe they like Emmanuel Mosley there, but at some point you're going to need to replace at least one of those guys, because you're not re-signing both. So that's the situation. They badly need a corner. I've heard reports that that's their top priority in this draft as well. I would start at cornerback here. I mean, offensively, they need a guard to replace Mike Person. That's to not probably the most pressing of needs. They could use a replacement for DeForest Buckner, but their D-line's deeper than people would guess. Corner is the most immediate need.
All right. Again, C.J. Henderson is a guy who keeps on coming up here. And I think he fits as, you know, he's a guy you can develop for a year. And I think he can get on the field this year, but I think he's a guy who you truly rely on in year two. And he's still on the board here. That makes plenty of sense. You know, other than that, the best non-quarterback that we have on the board, as far as, you know, if you were just building a straight up big board, would be Derrick Brown, the defensive tackle from Auburn. I guess that sort of raises the question, what do they think of Solomon Thomas at this point? Is Solomon Thomas a guy who kind of reduces inside on passing downs and replaces what DeForest Buckner used to give them? Are they comfortable with sort of the rest of that crew that they have there? You know, guys like DJ Jones and those types, or would they maybe address that defensive tackle spot?
Well, so the Auburn guy, how good of a pass rusher is he really? Or how will he be seen?
I would call him a B-plus pass rusher.
Okay. Well, I mean, if whoever they take in the reason I'm asking, whoever they take in the first round of D-tackle, unequivocally, they would do it because of his pass rushing prowess. Now, he might be a better run defender than pass rusher, but you need a guy that can get to the quarterback or threaten the QB on third down if you're going to draft at defensive tackle in the first round. And Solomon Thomas, you know, he's been around since 2017 now, so he's got 3 years under his belt. You kind of know what he is. And he's a high motor guy. He plays short, though. He's the opposite of DeForest Buckner. He's kind of, I don't know what his arm length is, but he doesn't play long, and that's been problematic for him. So he has to rely on his motor, and to his credit, he plays, you know, he gives you that, and he's a good rotational piece, but they're going to be looking for a defensive tackle still. Now, keep in mind, Eric Armstead, their base defensive end, he'll move inside on passing downs because D Ford will play the edge, and obviously Nick Bosa's on the other edge. So they're not in dire straits up front. But let's put it this way. If there's a cornerback that they give a great amount as, hey, he's a B, and that's not bad, and there's a defensive tackle that they would grade as an A, even though corner's a bigger need probably, they would go with the A defensive tackle.
Yeah. All right. Let's give him Derrick Brown then. They do pick again in the first round, or they're scheduled to, I should say, pick at 31. I think there's a good chance they obviously we'll want to trade down and collect picks, because their next pick is like round five or something like that. But let's give them Auburn's Derrick Brown there, which brings us to Tampa Bay at 14.
I can't imagine they wouldn't take ready-made players now? What would because of who they signed at QB and what they're doing, you know, what would be the point of drafting projects right now? So guys who are ready to contribute immediately, they need wide receiver depth there for Tom Brady. More importantly, they need a right tackle for him. And what we've talked about is, oh, well, the scheme becoming Bruce Arians' scheme like it's always been, which means deep drop back passing, one-on-one blocking up front. Or will it be a Tom Brady type scheme, which means spread formations, balls out pretty quickly. And if they're going to do it differently, they're going to keep a guy in to pass protect, because in New England, protection was the top priority, and then the routes were the second priority in that system. So my sense, Gary, is they're going to go with the Arians scheme with how what's been said publicly and kind of how they're talking about everything. I think Brady's going to have to adjust to Arians, as maybe as crazy as that sounds, Brady adjusting to anybody. If you're going to play that way, and I think you can with Tom Brady still, you have to have a right tackle for him, though. You can't have a weak spot on your line. In other words, the rest of their line's pretty solid. Right tackle's just, that's the hole because Damar Dotson's gone now.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. The way our exercise has played out here, they miss out on the top four guys, and now you're really talking, do you trust Isaiah Wilson, who's a bit of a project anyway, even though he's out of Georgia, a big school there. He's a massive right tackle. Austin Jackson, who I know was banged up last year, more of a finesse guy. You could, conceivably play him on the right side. He's a risk. I mean, he's a risk-reward type guy, and these are probably guys who most people would expect to come off the board, late day one or early day two. Robert Hunt out of Louisiana, another guy who I don't know if he's helping you right away, I guess is the issue there. And he's probably a little bit more of a, if you went the Brady route, the sort of quick game route, I think Hunt's a lot more enticing at right tackle in that scheme. So,
you need a dancing bear.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, when Arians was in Arizona, they drafted DJ Humphreys very high in that, 24th in the first round, so 24th overall pick. And Humphreys, who was a little bit of a project as well, and he's actually developed pretty well recently, he played on the right side for quite a while initially. They didn't just throw him in at left tackle. So you mentioned the athletic guy who you could, he's more agile than, we tend to think of right tackles as big bearish men who can move the line of scrimmage, and then the left tackles are the super athletes. I don't know if you need to think that way, though. In today's NFL, I don't know if it goes that way. I think you need athletes at both of those edges. So an agile right tackle is not the worst thing.
Okay. I think the guy who fits best is probably Austin Jackson at this point, as far as just getting a guy who's sort of, more pass protector than sort of, mauler at this point. So let's give him Austin Jackson, the USC tackle, and we'll see how he works out on the right side there for Tom Brady. And that brings us to, we got two more picks to go today. And by the way, I should remind people at the top of the show, we are not doing trade ups. So if you are banging your kitchen table for Miami to come up to 12 and take one of the quarterbacks or something, you just got to wait until next show, 18. But we got Denver and Atlanta left to go. Denver Broncos at 15. What are they looking for, Andy?
There's a lot of areas on offense that could use an upgrade. And offensive line was a problem last year. We kind of knew it would be. That might be getting fixed just enough. I can see where Denver would think they've fixed it. They drafted Dalton Risner in the second round a year ago. They've signed Graham Glasgow at center. They're moving Elijah Wilkinson into right guard. And then Juwan James, their big free agent signing a year ago. Some people think that was a risky signing. And so far it's played out that it has been a risky signing. But they're going to feel comfortable with him at right tackle. Otherwise, they would not have signed him. And then Garrett Bowles is the wild card at left tackle. But you're giving him one more year. So even though I think offensive line is a need in Denver, Gary, I don't think they'll see it with that same urgency. They might see the wide receiver position with that kind of urgency, because outside of Cortland Sutton, they really don't have a truly threatening starting caliber wide receiver, not an obvious one anyway.
So yeah, Justin Jefferson from LSU, who was, I mean, look, he's if you were building an NFL franchise, you would have taken the sophomore there, Ja'Marr Chase, but obviously he's not eligible for the draft. Justin Jefferson, you know, more than 100 catches last year. He's a guy who played out of the slot a lot. He is very improvisational jazz type of route runner, but he was a big time safety blanket type guy for Joe Burrow. And look, he probably has the potential to do a little bit more than just work out of the slot. I'm going to put a lot of stock in combine testing, but you know, he tested very well at the combine. I think he would be the consensus top receiver on the board at this point. The other guys, you get a lot of guys. T. Higgins is sort of a big catch radius guy. Maybe you wonder if he's explosive enough to do that at the NFL level. And then you got guys like Laviska Shenault from Colorado and Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State, who are sort of raw, almost like Debo Samuel type, sort of pure catch and run guys at this point, but not really complete receivers.
And are there any corners that jump off the board at this state in the draft?
I mean, you'd be talking about C.J. Henderson. To me, he is a second half of the first round. And obviously, we're at pick 15, so this is not insanity to. And we've talked about C.J. Henderson on the Florida corner on a couple of picks here. So he would be the corner you'd probably go with at this point. And I think he does make sense in a Fangio defense. But I do think Justin Jefferson, especially if you have a young quarterback, I think Jefferson is the type of guy you want in there. I mean, he's not, he's not Randy Moss or Calvin Johnson. Most guys are not. But, you know, he's probably a guy you wouldn't say this is our number one receiver for the next decade. But you'd say this guy is going to catch, 75 passes every year for the next 5 years.
Okay. I'll leave it up to you then. Number two corner is a need for them, and they might view it as a bigger need if A.J. Bouye's, he's got 1 year on his deal after this season at $13.5 million, which is what he's costing this year. So they probably feel good about that spot. But number two corner was a problem position for them last year. It's the only reason I ask. I think Vic Fangio, their head coach, but he's a defensive play caller, he'll probably feel that he can scheme around a problem at corner, or at least give me an average one, and I can do okay. Wide receiver, they need more help with. So I'd say go with the wideout.
Okay. We'll give him LSU's Justin Jefferson here at 15, which brings us to the last pick of this show, and that is the Atlanta Falcons at 16.
So the Jets went 6-2 in the second half of last season, and really nobody noticed. And the other team that went 6-2 in the second half was the Atlanta Falcons. And they won some. I mean, they beat the Saints at the front of that run. They beat the 49ers. They faced a decent Bucs. You know, they had a nice finish to the second half of the season. And they became the team we kind of thought they would be all along. So Atlanta ought to be thinking in win now mode, especially with Thomas Dimitroff, their GM, and Dan Quinn, their head coach, probably feeling a little bit of heat under their seat. They need to go in and try to win right now. So a ready-made player or a pure speed rusher, which I know, Gary, we haven't said there's a lot left on the board, but Atlanta's problem the last few years, the reason they've been a 7-9 type team is their four-man rush has been very inconsistent.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change this year. They don't really have any edge rushers at all on the roster. Tack McKinley's close to that, and maybe this will be the year he takes a big leap, although he's entering year four now. They need a pass rusher who can get off the edge.
Yeah, I think they're kind of out of luck at this point. Obviously, if Chasen, who the LSU guy who gave to the Cardinals at 8 on the last show, he's not on the board in our exercise. And I just don't think you have that type of player on the board once you get past Chase Young and Chasen here.
It would behoove Atlanta to trade up. I know we're not doing that in this exercise, but in the actual draft, it would behoove them to trade up and get, because they're an elite player or a high-level player. I guess they do have Dante Fowler. I'm forgetting that they signed him. They still need another edge rusher, though. To get a top corner or a top edge guy, and I think edge is the bigger deal there, that would do a lot for the rest of their defense.
Let's and we get to play up the Florida connection too with Dan Quinn. So look, CJ Henderson's on the board. You know, we talked about him at like I think every slot pretty much on this show. But you know, he's look, he's a high upside guy. I don't think he needs a whole lot more to sort of you know, tap into that potential. And I think if you're looking at the class of corners, I think he's the last guy. I do like Jalen Johnson, the Utah corner. I think, though, Henderson is the last guy you'd look at and say, this could be a true number one cornerback on the board here. So I think that makes a lot more sense than, you know, there are speed guys, they're sort of very raw speed guys who you can sort of get on day two here coming off the edge. Obviously, all of them have some sort of flaws. Otherwise, they'd come off the board much sooner. But I think C.J. Henderson makes a lot of sense for Atlanta here.
Okay. Now, it's interesting, the Florida connection, Dan Quinn was their defensive coordinator there 2011 to 2012. Some point that connection has to just sever, doesn't
you know
it?
What?
You could say he has a Hofstra connection because he was there in 2000.
It was top of mind because you mentioned Dante Fowler and him and Fowler gotcha. Go back. So, but I don't know. Maybe he just likes Florida guys. How about that, Andy?
Sure.
Root for his former employer. All right, that's 16 picks. Let me do a quick rundown, and then obviously we will be back with part three next week. That will start with Dallas at 17. We'll actually have 9 picks on that show, at least 9 picks, maybe even more than that, because if teams are repeats, we'll sort of fly through it faster. But Cincinnati, Joe Burrow, Washington, Chase Young, Okuda to Detroit, Wills to the Giants, Becton to Miami, Isaiah Simmons to the Chargers, Wirfs to Carolina, Chaisson to Arizona, Jerry Jeudy to Jacksonville, Andrew Thomas to Cleveland, Henry Ruggs to the Jets, CeeDee Lamb to Las Vegas, Derek Brown to San Francisco, Austin Jackson to Tampa Bay, Justin Jefferson to Denver, and now CJ Henderson to Atlanta. Andy, once again, I thank you for joining the show here, and I feel that this is just goodbye for now.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Gary.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is me, Gary Gramling. Special thanks once again to Andy Benoit, our special guest, for joining me on this one. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.